You will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness,
adding value, showing that you have value,
to the downside of venture capital.
You will not own the company.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO and today's guest host.
Good morning, Silicon Valley and the rest of the world. Another episode of the Tough Things First podcast with the longest serving CEO in Silicon Valley, Mr. Ray Zinn. Good morning, Ray.
Hey, guys. So good to see you again.
Good to see you as always. And boy, you sound in chipper today.
Well, I'm just feeling the spirit.
Well, you must have anticipated today's episode because this is my favorite. I've said it before. When people give us questions, when your listeners say, hey, Ray, I want to bend your ear, that's when I see things getting very interesting. We got three questions from the field today, and each one of them tickles me for an entirely different reason. And the first one simply says, how do you, Ray Zinn, go about hiring people? What qualities do you look for aside from skills and general competency?
Well, I look at their track record. If they're just coming right out of school, of course, I'll look at their what kind of student they were, what kind of grades they got, what kind of, how they did in certain courses. You know, not all of us do excellent in all courses, but I look at the courses that I think are important that they did well in. I also check their references. If they've had some work experience, I want to see how they did. I want to be able to talk to the people they work with. I also want to just see what kind of person they are, what kind of spirit they have inside of them, as you would. You know, there's a scout motto that I like, Scott Oath, which is, on my honor, I will do my best to do my duty. And that's what I'm looking for is people who are on their honor. They will do their best to do the work that they're being paid to do in the job. And so I have a little checklist that I use that lists different things, salary, company, travel. I list these different characteristics, and I ask them to put those in order of importance to them. And so if compensation is at number one, then that's a red flag. If they put travel as a very important thing to them and the job is really one they're staying in the office, then that's a red flag. If they're saying that the company is important, then that's a clue. If they say the person they work for, their supervisor is important, that's good. I just look at their different things that I think are important to be a successful employee. And having hired more than 10,000 people myself, I've gotten a pretty good idea of just what to ask them.
Are there any personality traits, anything that you see in the comportment or the things that a person talks about that suddenly makes you go, oh yeah, this is going to be the right person, you know, to hire today?
I like to ask them about how do they like their last job. And if they said they liked the job but they didn't like the supervisor, that'd be a very short interview. If they said that they liked the company but didn't like their job that they were in, that's another red flag. So there's different ways you can ask the question as you would if you were looking for a job yourself. There are things that you can look for that are kind of triggers that say, gee whiz, I should proceed further or back off.
Okay. Well, another one of your listeners focused on leadership, and I'll just quote them directly. I'm really enjoying your leadership tips. Which leaders and thinkers do you admire and why?
So what I admire in a good leader is their consistency, if they're a people person. And so I admire those leaders who are thinking more about their people, who love their people, as opposed to loving themselves or you know, loving the position that they're in. So, again, I'm looking for people who have the honest to goodness, people-centric values. The next thing I'm looking for is how their critical thinking is. When critical thinking is on issues that are really important, how do they analyze it? I mean, do they go by the seat of their pants? Do they just, you know, just say, hey, they just take a shot and move? As Tom Peters says in his book, you know, ready, aim, and never fire. So, you know, it depends upon, you know, I try to get, you know, try to get to the hub of just how they do what we call critical thinking.
Okay. Any names that popped to mind? Anyone in recent memory who you think was just a good, solid leader that fit all those criteria?
Well, I think that, you know, David Packard, Hewlett-Packard, had those kind of leadership skills. I admired, you know, Bob Noyce at Intel. I thought he was a good leader, you know, certain other you know, Jack Welch of GE, I thought had some good leadership qualities. So I just like to, you know, to find people who are really people centric people.
You know, I'm going to agree with you on Packard. I spent a good part of my career in the Hewlett-Packard industry, not working for HP, but in and around it, and you could see the quality of thought, the quality of leadership, the quality of culture within inside of HP, and how well it lasted right up, I think, through the Lou Platt years. And I still know a lot of people work for HP, and it's a crying shame, really, that culture vanished with Bill and Dave. It is something to weep about. And, you know, hopefully they'll get it back, but I'm not crossing my fingers anymore. Well, the last question that we have from your listeners is I think one that most of your listeners would like to ask, but maybe weren't brave enough. And so this fellow, he said, if you were starting a new technology company today, what markets would you find most interesting and most likely to be profitable? And then this is what I thought was interesting, for the long term. It sounds like he wants to build an enduring company.
That's a good question. You know, we're living in the age of change, and so, and again, it's a difficult time because there's so much going around about, you know, what's going to happen. America, make America great again. It said I should make my company be a U.S. company. Should it be a foreign company? You know, what kind of tax structure do I need to be concerned about? And so, there's a lot of pieces of that puzzle that have to be fitted together before you could actually determine, you know, what markets and areas you want to go into. If you're in Silicon Valley, of course, you know, that would mean more of a software oriented company. Most of semiconductor companies have moved out and no longer are in Silicon Valley. So if you want to start a semiconductor company, and you know, this you can still do it here, but it's not as attractive as it once was. If you're going to go into the oil and gas business, then Texas is the place. So you have to kind of decide what is your critical expertise that you have that is going to allow you to be successful in whatever venture you want to undertake. If you're going to fast food business, then obviously, you know, you don't want to go into to doing SaaS software. So you know, it's not an easy question to answer. I mean, there are different markets and different risks. Biomedics, you know, has certain risks. It's a long process with FDA approval, and you know, or pharmaceuticals. You know, I mean, so it depends upon really where you want to apply and what your skill set is.
Yeah, and you started to say something during that, and it sounded like you were saying it was less important what the industry was, but that you had to be in love with that industry. And I think I see a lot of people in Silicon Valley make that mistake. They say that this particular industry is going to be high growth, but maybe they don't have that vast passion for it, and so they never really make a great success when they jump into it.
If you're passionate, you'll succeed. If you're not passionate, you probably won't. So pick something that you think you've got a real love and a passion for, as opposed just to picking something.
Yeah, I think IoT right now is pretty much what the internet was back in 1995. We're all just sitting around the campfire gnawing on chicken bones trying to figure out what we're going to do with it.
Yeah, IoT is Internet of Things. That's IoT. So, you know, the internet's been around, you know, last 20-something years. So that's not new. But people throw the word around IoT like it's some kind of new market, new product. It's not. Now, we normally think of IoT now as being more wearable kind of things, or very, very portable. So if you're thinking of IoT portable, you know, that's possible. You know, ubiquitous cars, that's kind of an IoT thing, but that's not a portable thing in the sense of where you can't wear it, not a wearable. So, you know, we have to be careful about what we talk about as being truly IoT.
Yeah. Well, I grew up with a foot in the agricultural business, and so I tend to think of IoT and things like hydration monitors on, you know, the South 1,000 acres, you know, where you're going to be planting next year and things like that. And I think there's probably still a vast expanse of things that people haven't started really thinking about in terms of what we can do with semi-intelligent devices out in far-flung places. But, you know, time is going to help vet that industry.
Well, that RF stuff is a different animal altogether. So radio frequency and so wireless type technology is what we think of in terms of the nuts and bolts of IoT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, anyway, that was all the questions that we have from the readers today, and I'm thank you so much for answering those questions for them. And for our listeners, by all means, tune in next week. We're going to have another exciting episode. And in the meantime, go to toughthingsfirst.com. Make sure you connect up with Ray Zinn on social media on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And we will see you next week.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.